Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Dana Vice, registration 36656, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Todd Alvarez. The sole issue before this court is the trial on appeal, is whether the trial court's finding that Mr. Alvarez met the criteria to be determined as sexually violent predator or SVP was incorrect. And the answer to this question is yes, it was incorrect and it requires reversal in this case. The trial court specifically found that Mr. Alvarez was a stranger to DS, who is the victim in this case, even though the record clearly established that their relationship was anything but a stranger relationship. As the court is aware, to be designated a sexually violent predator, a defendant must meet four criteria under the statute 18.3.414.5, subsection 1A. And only one of these criteria is at issue here today, and that's whether the defendant met any one of three different categories, and I'll refer to them as relationship categories, before he could be found a sexually violent predator. And as the court is aware, the three different categories are either one that the victim and the defendant constituted strangers or had a stranger relationship, or two, where the defendant establishes a relationship with the victim primarily for purposes of sexual victimization, or three, whether the defendant promotes a relationship with the victim, primarily for purposes of sexual victimization. It's important to note that each or all of these categories are mutually exclusive, meaning that a defendant cannot meet more than one of these categories, and that's pursuant to the SOMB, the Sex Offender Management Board's own directive, that an offender cannot meet any one or any more than one of those categories. And that's in footnote 4 for the court's reference on page 2 of 9 on the SVP instrument itself.
And so I'm going to just stop you there for a second, and just a point of curiosity. I can see indeed why stranger is inconsistent with establishing or promoting a relationship. But on the latter two, why couldn't one first establish and then promote? I mean, I'm just sort of curious about the exclusivity of those two categories.
Well, it's not exactly clear why the SOMB's directive mandates that they are mutually exclusive. But each category does have specific meaning. One can establish a relationship. It's similar to a stranger relationship, as this court has defined in Tixier, for example. They can establish a relationship with somebody that they do not have a definable relationship with. Promoting a relationship applies in the context pursuant it applies in the context of where an offender has a pre-existing relationship, such as a stepfather relationship or a clergy relationship, and then expands the relationship with that person or with the victim. And so each one has a very distinct meaning and is applicable for the sexually violent predator status itself.
Am I correct in assuming that the promoting a relationship category is simply off the table in this case and no one has ever argued otherwise?
That's correct.
Okay.
Counsel, I want to explore this a little bit further, particularly the difference between a stranger and establishing a relationship. You say establishing a relationship, that sounds to me like something or creating something that didn't exist before. That is, you have to establish something means it didn't exist before. I'm trying to determine how is that different from being a stranger?
Well, a stranger situation would be somebody, or a defendant attacks somebody on the street who they don't know at all, for example. That's a stranger, typical stranger relationship. In the classic sense, whereas establish a relationship, it's predatory. And again, it goes back to the meaning or the purpose behind the SVP statute itself. It's predatory in the sense that it requires the defendant go out and seek somebody that they do not have a definable relationship with, either a stranger or an acquaintance, and establish a relationship primarily with the purpose of sexual victimization of that particular person. So they seek out somebody and they establish a relationship with that person primarily for that purpose. And both of those elements must be met for somebody to meet that relationship category itself. Whereas a stranger relationship, a relationship never exists in the classic sense.
All right. Now, as I understand the record here, the court first appeared to rule that the defendant had established a relationship with the victim DS here, although I don't think that was in the final order. But how is it that the victim, or excuse me, the defendant could have established that relationship given that he already knew her, or sorry, he already knew her, so that in your view, that would mean she can't be a stranger, as I understand your argument. But he could still, knowing her, try to create a relationship with her, that is, establish it for the purpose of sexual victimization. Why can't we just default back to the court's original findings here?
The court's correct in pointing out that in the September 23rd, 2009 initial sentencing hearing, the court seemingly indicated that he believed Mr. Alvarez may have met that established a relationship category. And that's also, I want to go back a little bit to explain that that was because the SOMB evaluator who completed the SBP instrument itself found that he met two relationship categories in direct violation of the SOMB's own mandate that you cannot fall into more than one category. However, that's not an established relationship, and I will go back to why he's not a stranger, but our position is also that he does not meet that established relationship category either. And here's why. Pursuant to People v. Gallegos, a division of this court clarifies exactly what constitutes establishing a relationship. First, you have to have evidence that the person, the defendant, sought out and found a victim primarily for purposes of sexual victimization. And that relationship then is fostered primarily for the purposes of sexual victimization. So where you have a pre-existing relationship, as we had in this case, you can't have established a relationship, or that established a relationship category does not apply.
Could you then have promoting a relationship? Somebody you already know,
right?
So you're not establishing a relationship,
right.
but you move the relationship in a different direction. Mm-hmm. That's promoting the relationship.
That is where you have a pre-existing relationship, that's promoting a relationship. In this particular instance, the SOMB evaluator made an affirmative finding that that category did not apply. And if you look to the SVP instrument itself, it has specific checkboxes that need to be found by the evaluator in order to find that the promoting the relationship category does apply. In this instance, the evaluator found it did not apply, and the trial court in that original sentencing hearing on September 23rd, 2009, actually made the finding that the promoted a relationship category did not apply. So that was never an issue because the record supports that that relationship category does not apply. It was found by the SOMB provider. It was also determined by the court not to apply. And that's because the specific findings required for that particular relationship category had not been met. So the only two remaining categories left were the stranger category and the established a relationship, neither of which apply in this case.
Ms. Weiss, what is the legal effect of the SOMB evaluator finding that there was both a stranger relationship and an established a relationship in apparent violation of the protocols or the regulations?
Well, there's no legal effect as advanced by case law, for example. It just goes to show that the SOMB evaluator in this instance made findings that were contradictory to the SOMB's own mandate in this case, and demonstrates further why the findings in this case were clearly erroneous, the factual findings as well as the legal application, which this court reviews de novo.
Well, wouldn't it, if there's no legal problem, wouldn't there be an incentive for SOMB evaluators to check all three relationships in other cases on the theory that they're bound to get one of them correct?
Yes, although, you know, the SOMB has its own guidelines, and evaluators have to be approved and certified by the SOMB to administer these tests. Whether they have an internal policy for addressing this case when an evaluator doesn't follow those rules, I'm not sure. But the legal effect is that they aren't supposed to do it, and it's because these relationship categories have very distinct meanings, and it demonstrates a misunderstanding of those relationship categories at a very minimum by the evaluator in this case.
On that last point, counsel, I want to read what I believe is the definition of stranger in the risk SVP risk assessment form, which is that a stranger victim is a stranger when the victim has never known or met the offender, or has met the offender in such a casual manner as to have little or no familiar or personal knowledge of said offender. I'm sorry for choking here. Aren't we bound by this definition, and why doesn't the evidence establish, that the defendant had, or the victim had, little or no familiar or personal knowledge?
Thank you, Your Honor. We are not bound by that definition. In the sense that it's one definition to look at. But our position is that under any definition of a stranger relationship, whether it's a dictionary definition, whether it's the SOMB's definition, or whether it's a definition advanced by a division of this court, for example, in People v. Hunter, Mr. Alvarez was not a stranger to DS under any stretch of any of those definitions. And here's why. At the sentencing hearing, DS went before the trial court and addressed the trial court specifically out of her own words. And this is a 17-year-old girl at this point, I believe. And she specifically said, "I was told he," referring to Mr. Alvarez, "was part of my family. I treated him like he was my dad. I trusted him about everything I needed to. I introduced him to everyone." And that was on the record out of DS's own mouth, describing her relationship with Mr. Alvarez.
Ms. Weiss, there was apparently, according to the people's brief, there was the police report statements quoting DS is saying that she hardly had any relationship with Mr. Alvarez. So how do we reconcile those two, or do we defer to the trial court's determination in that regard?
Your Honor, in this case, I think it is clearly erroneous based on the words of DS. I think that it's the most reliable evidence to hear from the victim herself describing her prior relationship with the defendant at a sentencing hearing, rather than relying upon police reports that are summarizing, and we don't know to what extent or how thorough they are, hearsay statements that they allegedly received from that individual at a prior date and time. I think the best evidence is from the victim herself and her description out of her own words, or out of her own mouth, how she described her prior relationship with Mr. Alvarez.
Couldn't the trial court discount that description and just say, "I think you're exaggerating here, and I don't find this particular description credible"?
Your Honor, if it had a basis to do so, but in this case it did not discredit her words, and I think it's the most reliable evidence. I do see that I have 2 minutes left for on my time, and I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Very well, Ms. Weiss.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Allen. I'm here on behalf of the people, registration number 23155. I want to start kind of generally and then move into the specifics of this case, because I think it's particularly important, especially since there are several cases right now waiting in front of the Supreme Court on this SVP issue. Two of the cases that were discussed, Gallegos and Hunter, are on right now cert pending in front of the Supreme Court, because I think that there's a real problem here. And I think, with all due respect, part of defense counsel's argument points out what the problem is. At one point, she's talking about how under Webster's, or kind of what our idea of stranger is or established is, it's clear that the defendant didn't fall into either of those categories. But then she also says that the evaluator, specifically found, according to the definition that the SOMB put together in this SVP ASI, that he was not promoting the relationship. And so we have to follow that, because the evaluator specifically found and, you know, checked the boxes or went through and said, under SOM's definition, he doesn't. But that's not the definitions that we're arguing about for stranger and for established a relationship. And I'm fully aware that my argument right now goes against the law at this point, Your Honor's Gallegos opinion, and then also Hunter, which they came off of Tixier, and although we went for cert in that first case, it wasn't granted. But getting back to my general argument, as this court's aware, the SVP statute is a socioscientific determination as well as a legal designation. It is not a sentence enhancer. And these phrases in the statute have a specialized technical meaning that have been created and defined by the SOM and that need to be followed.
Also, you say they need to be followed. What legal basis is there for saying that we should or that we have to follow the definition in the SVP of the SVP in the SOM?
Well, I believe that the statute, as this court knows, the statutes have to be read as a whole and according to their plain language. And words and phrases that have acquired a technical or particular meaning, whether by legislative definition or otherwise, shall be construed accordingly. And this is where I think this comes from. Next. So in 183.414.52, the legislature says that the court shall use the SVP ASI, the Sexually Violent Predator Assessment Screening Instrument, which includes everything, the SORs and then this behavioral determination. It's the whole thing, to determine whether the defendant meets the criteria. And then the legislature also dictated that these experts get together to create this assessment to assist the sentencing court in determining the likelihood that an offender would commit one or more of the offenses under subsection 1A2 under the circumstances described in the relationship criteria. So I think if you look at those all together, the SOM was created to assist this court in making these determinations.
But if it says, if it uses the word assist, to assist the court, does that mean, in your view, Ms. Allen, that the SOMB determinations are binding on trial court judges?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that the court doesn't still have discretion, because you're looking at the facts of the particular cases. But it does mean, in our opinion, that your discretion or the trial court's discretion is contained to what the SOM has said are the important factors, because they're the ones that they're this group of people that includes, you know, prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, people from the community that understand this topic, understand the reasoning behind why we need SVP designations, why some people should be designated, why others shouldn't. So for the court to make its own definition, it just doesn't make any sense under the way the statutes are written. It just doesn't.
Counsel, let's look at the first category, stranger. Is it your position that that somehow is a technical meaning different from the common sense, ordinary meaning of the term?
Well, I think that if you look at the definition, everyone seems to find Webster's particularly persuasive. Stranger ends up being someone that you really don't know at all. But that's not what the definition is for in the evaluation.
Well, and I think that's what's something I'm having trouble with, because I don't see where the statute gives this group the ability to define terms. It gives the group the ability to determine what criteria should be applied in determining whether a particular category is met. But it seems like defining terms is a legislative act that would belong to the General Assembly.
Well, the General Assembly's mandate is that the SOMB, in my opinion, our argument is, the mandate of the General Assembly is to define define these terms so that they are easily understandable. Otherwise, what sort of criteria do you have when Your Honor can think that stranger means one thing, and His Honor, you know, in Adams County Trial Court can think stranger means something else? You've got discretion based on the facts of any particular case, but I believe that those are constrained by what the SOM, the professionals, the people who really know what's going on here, that's constrained by how they have defined it. And I think that by, if you look at the statutes in conjunction with each other, the SOM statute that's in Title 16 in conjunction with the SVP statute, I think that that's where you get authority for the trial court using the SOM created criteria and standardized program to guide the trial court's discretion. I think that the trial court still does have discretion because you're basing it on the factual determinations of every particular case.
Counsel, do you believe that the SVP risk assessment form definition is materially different from the Webster definition?
Of stranger?
Yes.
Well, I do. Let me preface this by saying I don't disagree that there's a real question in this particular case of whether the definition of stranger under any definition actually applies. I don't think, though, that it's clearly erroneous, but we can get to that in a second. I do think that it's a close call. But by adding, or has met the offender but has little or no familiar or personal knowledge of said offender prior to the current offense, I mean, that's really opening it up, which...
Isn't that essentially just saying that there is such a category of person is essentially a functional stranger? I recognize this person as the guy who works at the tattoo parlor or whatever. I know he worked there, but I have no knowledge at all about him or who he is. So this is a person who is a functional stranger.
I think that there's a little more wiggle room there as far as, you know, how much someone has to know about someone before they're a stranger or not a stranger. But I want to actually, I don't want to lose track, I am losing track, but...
Well, Ms. Allen, while you're trying to get on track, let me just ask you, it seems to me that the more wiggle room there is in the definition of stranger, the less consistent that definition is with the dictionary definition. Would you agree with that?
Probably.
And unless
I don't think that that matters because, again, and I apologize, Your Honor, I did not mean to interrupt.
I interrupted you, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Again, these definitions are not from Webster's because Webster's not SOMB. I mean, we need to separate this out. And that goes on to, it's not just stranger, it's also established a relationship and promoted a relationship, although I'm not gonna get into promoted here because first of all, I'm gonna run out of time, but second of all, I think that this whole established issue is really important, and it's one of those issues that right now is up before the Supreme Court. Did you want to?
Couple questions. Okay. First, on the stranger issue, and then we'll go to the established issue. On the stranger issue, I'm looking at the victim's own testimony, as Judge Russell alluded to earlier, and she says she regarded the defendant like a father, introduced him to friends. She obviously spent some time with him. I'm just trying to figure out under what conceivable definition of stranger that fits.
Right. I see what you're saying, but I did want to point one thing out. She doesn't say that she thinks of him as a father. She says that she was told that he was like a part of his family. So I think right there you're walking into some very interesting credibility issues of, you know, whose words is she speaking here? Is this really what she thinks? Is this what these people have told her? You know, he was like a father to you. So she's getting up there and saying the same thing?
No, she says, quote, "I treated him like he was my dad. I trusted him about everything I needed to. I introduced him to everyone, even my boyfriend." I'm going to paraphrase the boyfriend part. That's a quote. I mean, that just doesn't sound like a stranger to me.
And I don't disagree. I do not disagree with you right there. But that's not the only evidence that the court had in front of it. And that's where we get into this whole clearly erroneous standard. I mean, the trial court is the one that has to make the findings of fact. And if there is evidence in the record that supports those findings of fact, this court has to abide by them, unless it's making this clearly erroneous finding. And I think in conjunction with those comments, there is this, the whole other side of what was in the police report and everything else, that she hung out at this house because it was her best friend's house. She had contact with him a couple of times before the assault. She was told his name once, but the next time she saw him again, she couldn't even remember his name. She had to ask him what his name was. He never communicated with her unless she initiated conversation to find out where her friend was. It was always the communication and anything was referred to the friend. So there was no relationship there. And I understand that even that goes against the Webster's Dictionary of stranger, because there is still communication. But I think that it still would fit under the, I need to find my second part of the stranger category that says, but has little or no familiar or personal knowledge of said offender. Yes, it conflicts. I mean, I am not going to stand up here and say otherwise. The question is it clearly erroneous?
Ms. Allen, my concern is that if SOMB, for example, defines stranger to say somebody with whom you had contact 15 times or less, then it would be coming up with its own definition, maybe based on expertise of dealing with sexual assault cases. But at the same time, that definition might be contrary to the common understanding or the dictionary definition of the term stranger. And so it's, at some point, isn't there a tension between how SOMB defines stranger and how it ought to be defined, or how it is defined based upon the fact that it's a statutory term?
Well, I think that that's why we have to, for the purposes of this, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, finding someone guilty because they're a stranger, or finding someone guilty because they've established a relationship. This is a designation for the safety of the community, which is why we've got this specialized board that is assisting our trial courts with these definitions. And I'm not skirting your issue, or maybe I am, but I see how little time I have left, and I think it's really important that we get to this other established a relationship, because we do have record support for that finding. And my guess is, you know, with the whole mutually exclusive thing, I know that it's mandated that these are supposed to be mutually exclusive. I'm not going to get there.
I'll ask you a question about that. So I'll give you a chance, maybe. What I'm interested in, I guess, I realize you're in a spot, because it means something when, in a case in which you're arguing to support the court's finding of there being a stranger, that you're also asserting an alternative definition, that there's enough there to establish a relationship. My narrow question is, why does it matter if the court's finding rests on a finding of a stranger? Why would we care about the sufficiency of evidence that could support a finding of established a relationship if indeed the finding before us here rests on stranger?
Well, because the sexually violent predator questionnaire, for lack of a, or, you know, the SVP ASI requires you to go on to the next step if you do not find, the evaluator does not find stranger. So you have to go on. And by that I mean, I think everybody has to go on. We can't just say, okay, it's the mutually exclusive, they decided stranger, we think they're not a stranger, And since they made that one choice, we can't look at the other two choices. So we're just going to say that they're not an SVP. I mean, that's just wrong. That's just wrong. We can't do that.
Well, with all due respect, I think strictly our job is not to determine whether this person is an SVP. We just determine whether the trial court's ruling is correct. And so the trial court's ruling before us is that this person is an SVP because
of the stranger.
Because of the stranger.
Okay, and if this court disagrees, the case, well, there are two, and that actually gets me to the end of what I was going to say anyway. I'm sorry I didn't get to the established part, but apparently it doesn't matter for the purposes of this argument. This court should remand in order to have these other findings made. In this case, we have them, and I know that again, is a little bit weird because of the way that they went through the evaluation. But I think a remand in every case, if this court or a court determines that they don't meet the definition, you have to go back and continue on to see if they meet one of the other two definitions. There can't just be a finding that because it didn't work, because you found that it was clearly erroneous for a stranger, that he's not a SVP. And on that note, I would say the other option is to, because the only issue here is this SVP finding, the other option is to hold this in abeyance and see what the Supreme Court says on some of these cases that are dealing with these definitions. I'm sorry to go over. Thank you.
Judge Jones, did you have a question that you wanted to ask? Okay, thank you, Ms. Allen. Ms. Vice, we'll give you a couple of extra minutes if you need them, because we allowed Ms. Allen some extra time as well.
Thank you, I appreciate that. I did want to touch on a few things. First of all, the big picture here is that the SVP designation is reserved for the most warranting of situations or cases or defendants. And so they are specifically targeting people who are determined to be or have predatory characteristics in the first instance. And that's why they have these relationship categories as a prerequisite before moving on to the last part of that SVP instrument, part three, which is the risk assessment. So I think it's important to remember that big picture and step back and say, is this a stranger? Is this somebody who exhibits predatory characteristics because they establish a relationship primarily for purposes of sexual victimization? Or is this a person who is predatory because they promote a relationship primarily for purposes of sexual victimization? And to that effect, I did want to mention that we are asking that this court vacate the SVP designation and remand solely to the trial court for removal of that designation from the minimus. And here's why. In this case, we have two separate findings. The first one at the initial sentencing hearing, where the court did consider established a relationship and seemingly indicated that he felt that relationship category applied. Then the parties came back for the subsequent hearing solely on the SVP issue, and the court determined that the stranger category applied. For the reasons that we've just discussed, the stranger category does not apply here. And similarly, the established a relationship category does not apply here because Mr. Alvarez had a 12-year prior relationship with Diaz's friend's mother. He was a stepfather to Diaz's friend's friend, essentially. And because Diaz and Mr. Alvarez met in the innocuous circumstances of that context, there was already a pre-existing relationship. And Mr. Alvarez did not seek out a relationship with Diaz and certainly did not seek out a relationship primarily for purposes of sexual victimization. I think that the record establishes all of that, and the record also establishes that the promoted a relationship category does not apply based on the SOMB's finding, as well as the trial court's original finding at that September 23rd, 2009 hearing. And there's no evidence, because those findings are in the record. It's appropriate in this case, as it was in Gallegos, and also because the Attorney General has never argued that promoted a relationship applies and did not do so in the briefs. It's appropriate, just as it was in Gallegos, to remand this simply for removal of that SVP designation.
Counsel, these categories are mutually exclusive. So if I'm the trial court and I get to the first one, I decide that that's met, I don't go any further, as your opponent pointed out. So why don't we, if we decide that there's not a stranger relationship here as a matter of law, then why don't we remand for actual consideration and actual findings as to whether the established relationship criteria has been met?
Your Honor, in this case, I don't think that it's necessary simply because we have the SOMB's SVP instrument filled out by the evaluator indicating that that category does not apply. Additionally, in this case, normally a court may stop at the first category that they find, but in this case, the court at that original sentencing at least did note that that relationship category, promoted relationship, did not apply. And so I think that there it was considered by the trial court through mentioning that at that initial sentencing hearing. Additionally, I did want to hit on very briefly, because this was addressed with the Attorney General, pursuant to statute, the legislature has directed that the SOMB provide guidance and develop tools specifically as it relates to the risk assessment, which is part three of the SVP instrument. It did not direct that the SOMB define relationship categories. And despite what was mentioned by the Attorney General that they are mandated with defining those terms, there's nowhere in the statutory language that actually mandates that the SOMB define terms that the court.
Ms. Weiss, your time is up.
Thank you.
Do you have another question?
I did.
Okay.
Can you believe it? My last question, Counsel, do you believe there's a material difference between the SVP definition of stranger and the Webster's definition?
I do think that there is a difference, and I've outlined both definitions in my opening brief. With Webster's,
we're focusing more on the complete stranger in this.
Right. Webster's, I believe, is, quote, a person or thing that is unknown or with whom one is unacquainted. And the SOMB's definition is a stranger relationship exists, quote, when the victim has never known or met the offender or has met the offender in such a casual manner as to have had little or no familiar or personal knowledge of said offender prior to the current offense. I do think that those can be reconciled and that although that language of has met the offender in such a casual manner seems to open it up a little bit, I do think that you can reconcile it by indicating, as you were mentioning earlier, seeing somebody in the tattoo parlor.
It's a functional stranger situation.
It's a functional stranger situation. And I do think that they can be reconciled in that manner.
Thank you.
I think we're done.
Thank you, Mr. I may ask the court to please vacate and remand okay. for removal.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Thank you again, Ms. Allen. We appreciate both of your arguments this morning.